Dude, we are going to energize the country.
Stop Brexit.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Seamus, I'm not sure this is a great idea, is it?
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. I'm joined by my co-host Conrad.
Hello.
And in this episode, we're delighted to be joined by William Kajani, who is the elections, politics and policy analyst for Star Sports Betting. Welcome to the podcast, William.
It's an honour to be here.
So to begin with, I'd like to ask, what sort of like methodology do you use to predict which way people will bet on particular outcomes of things, whether they be elections or leadership elections or cabinet reshuffles? What sort of process do you use to predict that?
We use a variety of them. We use quite a bit of data. Sometimes there'll be proper models which you'd use for odds on all sports, not just politics. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we will actually just use the same data as everybody else in polling terms. We like to use averages rather than one-out outlier polls to get a good picture of how, let's say, an election might go. And then maybe we could also use models. We like British politics, certainly I like to use that. Flavable also as a good guideline for what we're currently doing now, which is setting up our general election market. In terms of predicting how punters will go, we never know. So originally, it's our initial take. And that initial take will be powered probably by trying to get as accurate a reading as possible if it's an election. If it's something different, like, say, a leadership contest or who's going to get this next position in the cabinet, for instance, that is, again, more personal opinion. Mm. You know, we do have a little team here, so we will make some moves regarding, let's say, when Rory Stewart entered the race to be next mayor of London. We try to be competitively priced, whilst also knowing it's very hard, usually for an independent, to win, and try to sort of find the right place between what we think the public will go for. Stewart has reasonable brand recognition. He was a very popular bet. And what we think is actually likely to happen. We still think that the card's a big favourite and we think this helps him, for example.
So in terms of like future political events sort of coming up, you know, whether Brexit's going to happen on the 31st, what kind of odds is us being offered at the moment?
Okay, so we are very short on there being an extension, meaning basically we don't leave on the 31st. We actually have, at this current moment, odds of 2-7 fractionally that Brexit is delayed past the 31st. Sorry, it's 2-9. Now, just quickly to explain, if you're not a betting person, when you bet with fractional odds, the number on the right-hand side is what you would put on to win in profit, the number on the left. And if you win, you do get your stake back as well. So 2-9 basically is an 81.30% chance that we won't have Brexit by the 31st. That sort of near 20% or so is basically if we have a no deal, which would basically come one of two ways. The Ben Act is frustrated, which leads to a whole mess of other things down the line, or the European Union refuses an extension. We don't think either of those are very likely, and we believe the Ben Act will just about hold. So that's sort of the calculation behind that particular market.
Has there ever been an instance when, due to the odds that you've placed on a particular event, for example, the odds of someone winning a leadership contest, that has then influenced how that person has run their campaign, or whether if the odds are against them, whether they've decided to pull out of the race?
Not as I know of yet. just because people connected to campaigns tend to usually have their own internal polling. So if somebody drops out, it's usually because their internals have shown there's no path forward. What we find is more common is plenty of people from campaigns and plenty of politicians in general will actually back themselves. Nigel Farage is very fond of doing this because he knows our own debate, Keith, quite a lot, and he actually had a big bet on himself for the Brexit Party to win the most seats in the European elections, which cost us a pretty penny. I think actually Farage bet on Leave in the referendum with Ladbrokes. Quite a few Leavers actually bet quite a lot. So what tends to happen is usually they'll see a good internal, or they'll think they're underrated by our prices. They'll come and back it, and sometimes we shorted it because of that. But it's difficult to know exactly sort of who is extremely well connected. You know, Westminster, for all it's a bubble, it's a rather big bubble. There's lots of people who could be very well connected. That's part of the challenge.
In terms of sort of how good betting is at predicting an outcome, I don't know what the sort of case is in the UK, but I know in America, sort of a lot of the betting is more on sort of trendy candidates, so Bernie Sanders, Andrew Yang, and not so much on like Joe Biden, even though in the polls Joe Biden's doing fairly well. I don't know if this is a similar thing in the UK, but how do you think sort of betting versus polls in terms of predicting an outcome is useful?
I would say with the betting, it's people's willingness to actually stake a real outcome on their opinion. Basically, there's a risk on your opinion when you bet. When you bet, you've put skin directly in the game. Regarding the betting market, sometimes we can be different to the polls, and sometimes we can win or beat the poll. But generally speaking, when you're the bookmaker, you want to make a profit from all of the outcomes that people have backed. So we could be wrong in terms of the fact that the person we gave the biggest chance to doesn't win. That's usually good for us. You know, this is just a general rule. Also, the polls, the markets tend to link up quite closely. For instance, we were shortest on the Tories to win the most seats and the majority at the last election, as we are now. I think with the betting market, you'll sometimes get sort of people with more skin in the game, so those people believe their opinions a lot more, but the methodology can tend to be the same. And I'd say with the betting market, it's a good indicator to momentum, to quick change of momentum. But over time, I'd say methodology of polling will probably be more accurate. Also, a general political point to make, just because the polls didn't mirror the election results exactly doesn't mean that they were wrong. It's a bugbear of mine, but people say this about the referendum, people say this about Trump, people say this about the election. But actually, you know, polls are used as an indicator. All of those results are actually quite a bit closer to the polls than people would have you believe, but there just wasn't very much in it at the end.
What certain people can argue that perhaps because politics is involved so much with people's lives, that there is perhaps a bit of an ethical grey area around betting on politics and betting on the outcome of a particular election. What would you say to those people?
I don't think there is any ethical grey area to it. I think if you believe that the act of gambling in itself is immoral, then I guess you might say, well, betting on X or Y is immoral. But in reality, the overwhelming majority of people don't believe it's the moral thing. And I'd also just in general say betting is, like many other things, something that, as long as you're responsible with, can be and is considered by most people to be very enjoyable. Now, I don't think there's a particular life effect with politics. You know, these things are extremely important. But that hasn't ever stopped people from trying to predict or commentate on the result. Even the politicians involved will sometimes bet. There are people who bet on Jeremy Corbyn to become Labour leader. Plenty of people bet on Leave, and plenty of people bet on Remain. Do those people not vote? Do those people not get affected by policy decisions? The political is personal, the personal is political. Everybody is affected by politics. That's sort of the baseline of living in a representative democracy. So you will never be able to separate the two personally.
In terms of making bets, I had a little bit of some success last election on betting on individual constituencies. In terms of that, do you think that's a sort of a good way of doing it, and what do you think's sort of, I know it's probably not in your interest to say, but what's the best strategy in actually making a bit of money off political betting?
Best strategy in terms of making money, I would say, would be to have a broad horizon. Have a broad horizon. Try to consider arguments from both sides. Don't let your opinions of a certain politician blind you to their strategic intention or their possibility of future success. To put that in really simple English, just because you hate a politician or just because you don't like a policy doesn't mean that other people don't, doesn't mean that other people can't find that sort of thing attractive. A lot of people miss this with Leave, that because they thought that the Leave campaign was insular and angry, and in some ways it was, and it wouldn't have support in the country. Actually, it did, had plenty of support. Those people beat the market in a big way. It was the same with Trump. People who spent more time trying to see if there was a space for an argument ended up making the biggest profit because they were willing to look earliest and look hardest and sort of to see things opposite from their own personal view. Also, I would say, be vigilant of hotspots, right? Party conferences. The Lib Dems, they were 14-1 to win the majority, I think, and about 20-ish-1 to win most seats before their conference. The visual optics of them bringing on Sam Gyimah, of them having a lot of time to explain their policies, as you do party conferences, and of course with basically the revoke Article 50 argument getting a lot of traction, even if not everybody liked it, it brought their odds down. People started to back them for the next election. They're now 14-1 to both win the most seats and to win the majority, which is quite astonishing, I think, for one of the two parties that basically aren't Labour or the Tories. So you can get trading chances. You can beat the market as well. Sometimes it takes a while to react to changes. And I would say, in general, if you're vigilant and you're willing to be open-minded, then yeah, there's definitely big advantages to be had.
Has there ever been a result of a bet that you've ever been taken aback by? Or is it because, obviously, you have internal polling and you've analysed these events in quite great detail, are you unshockable by the results of particular events that people bet on?
I'd say I'm more unshockable now than I used to be. one of my first experiences sort of doing this job was going to Peterborough to cover the election. We took bets in the tens of thousands on the Brexit Party candidate. I remember thinking they were home and hosed. And certainly when we were there, or I was there in general, for most of my time there, I thought it was a done deal. But interestingly, I noticed there was a bit of support or a bit of a positive mood around the team for Lisa Forbes. And if you went and you spoke to them, they were very happy with their efforts. They were quietly confident. They thought people had been knocking very well, responding very well on the door knocks. Now, I went into town that night thinking it was still a done deal, thinking it might be close-ish, but we'd be getting taken for sixes and sevens. Then the count came, and then you saw sort of the mood around the Brexit Party sort of change and drop. And it turns out that Forbes did win. Now, that was, I think, one of the results that probably actually still to this day, it does take you back a bit. I ended up being quite surprised that we didn't have an election in, well, basically either in September or October. Although possibly that was a really good thing for us because, purely because we had six-figure bets on election in October, election in September. And yeah, I'd say I'm much less sort of shockable now. Just because I think anything can happen. I think it's now more expected anything can happen. I think in general the population is actually becoming less shocked by everything. We're beginning to, I think, sort of, we're beginning to adapt to the alternative reality we're living in.
In terms of going back, sort of going to more general politics, we've just had the Queen's speech. What's your view on what's been announced in the Queen's speech? Is it just kind of what was expected, or is it like, or is it kind of some surprises in there?
No real policy surprises. The National Rail franchise and the National Environmental Body are interesting, although generally speaking, one of the few sort of half decent things the government's managed to do has been environmental targets. Like, for all that, I don't think the government does too much well. They have reduced the amount of fossil fuels that we use. They have implemented green policies. I don't think they go far enough, but DEFRA seem to be doing Department of Environmental Affairs seem to be doing a reasonable job. There's an overhaul of rail franchising. That, I think, is really, really interesting. Basically, because long story short, I think we don't have another alternative to HS2. But if HS2 doesn't work, then that's not going to be much comfort. And also our current rail system, before you can get to HS2, needs overhaul. So that would be interesting. From a betting point of view, not a huge amount in it, apart from the large amount of law and order bills. I think it's very likely we're going to see a sort of Reagan-esque Republican-style 1980s, 90s hard-hitting law and order campaign in this election. Which is basically this sort of rebirth from the dead of, are you thinking what we're thinking? That's important for, I think, the next election markets, just because, in general, winning British campaigns or campaigns that have beaten expectations in Britain have tended to offer at least one really positive element. Leave in 2016 was all, look at how good things could be outside the EU. Even if the rest of the campaign was actually quite angry and insular, and played to some, what I think people would say were voters' worst instincts. I think personally there was a positive element that Remain didn't quite have. Labour did well, better than expectations certainly in 2017. Even if they didn't win, they denied the Tories a victory. The Brexit Party, I know, are seen by many to be quite insular and angry once again, but actually they're campaigning at the rallies, and especially on social media, was really rather positive. It's really rather optimistic and uplifting, especially their political broadcasts as well. They present sort of a vision of a happier Britain, where everything is as it used to be. So if the Tories are going to do that, run on this high power elements. There's got to be things that that people will think, oh, that could be good. And the main one is infrastructure. That's the main one. But I don't know necessarily if they're going to have the success in turning it into a coherent narrative that may fail to do. And that's important because they are currently 100 to 30 on, or basically 3 to 10, to win the most seats. That's a 76% chance the market gives them. It's a very short price to back at, and I'm not sure you'd want to be doing it until you were confident that approach will basically bring people on board rather than freeze people out, if you know what I mean.
Just mentioning social media, how influential do you think social media has become in our political discourse in the last 5, maybe even 2 to 3 years?
Massively important. I think now's the point it can decide elections. I think it's that big now. I would never have told you 5 years ago that social media could decide an election on its own, in and of itself. It can now. There is absolutely no, there's just no argument. I think Facebook is more directly influential than Twitter in this regard, purely because there are more people on there, and those people tend to span a wider section of class and of political background too. But I think Twitter's also important because messages tend to flow from one network to another. So party political broadcasts will be put on Twitter and Facebook at the same time. Influential people will see it. They'll share via Facebook, and you get this cycle. And the thing about social media is, because it's unregulated, it literally is party political TV. We're pretty much, because of the difficulty of getting your hand on it, there's very little regulation. There's very little limit to what you can do. Not only Vote Leave, but all political parties now are mining data at an incredible rate. This is important for political betting because markets can't pick up on this nearly as quickly as punters can. If you see an outfit which is going really well on social media in all the right places, it's impossible, basically, to really translate that into, say, a change in the polls, etc. It's actually very difficult. I know we have online polling, but the online polling won't pick up the subtleties of a really good ad or a slogan that begins to take off. 350 million is an idea and an argument, but there are lots more now.
So we've got the SNP conference going on as well. Do you think that Scottish independence has become more likely in the last few years?
I would say the short answer is yes, definitely. Longer answer is basically, if you'd said to a nationalist, you'll lose the first referendum, but your argument would become stronger, this would have gone past even their wildest dreams. We have a non-functioning government which is about to take Scotland out of the European Union, possibly with no agreements. We have a Prime Minister who, and I know that's how the system works, but we have a Prime Minister who has not had an election yet, who is pushing this course of action. We have almost routinely ministers of this government basically, I think it's not unfair to say, disparaging Celtic nations, certainly disparaging the Scottish independence quest. We also have the leader of one of the three big parties. I think pretty much without a doubt, basically saying, I want a referendum, a second referendum for the whole of the country, but I don't want to give you one, despite the fact that in both cases, it would be basically a referendum which had come about because people wanted to overturn the first one. Whatever you think about it, that's the case. So I think definitely more likely. I think we'll go with, if there's an India F2, I'd imagine we'd start probably Yes's favourite, maybe 4-5. Yes, I think the result of Brexit depends this hugely. If Brexit is stopped, argue for independence becomes much harder. But that said, I think there still might be an argument for it. I think if you have any sort of Brexit, I think probably, this is a personal opinion, but I think probably the moral argument is to give the Scottish another say.
Now, one of the other things that has become at the heart of the Brexit negotiations has been our relationship with Northern Ireland, and the Prime Minister has proposed that any arrangement which the UK and the EU comes to has to be voted on in Stormont. Now, Stormont hasn't been sitting for over 1,000 days now. How likely do you think it is that the Northern Irish parties will be able to come to an agreement and Stormont will be able to sit again? And what would be the effects of that?
Regarding how likely it is Stormont will be able to sit, I'm going to cede here to other experts. Basically, the UK and a changing Europe and the Institute for Government do excellent work on this, and I would definitely recommend listening to and reading the work of Dr. Katie Hayward of the UK and the Changing Europe and Dr. Nicole McEwen, I believe of the same organisation, and from the Institute for Government, Jess Sargent. Now, I think just on my base reading, I think it's fairly unlikely that you're going to get Storm returning rather soon. I believe there are a lot of domestic issues which are impeding it, and I don't know if Brexit is going to suddenly force everybody back to the table. But I'd say generally on this, as a point, listen to people from Northern Ireland. Listen to those experts. Do not disparage their expertise. Respect it. I respect sort of the analysis. But in general, the big problem with the proposals and any pathway to a deal is that if you're, say, it's a red line storm that has to vote on it, it puts a huge imbalance of political power in sort of any one given party. Plus, also, you do not know the results of a future election. You do not know how the storm will be balanced by the time the next 4 years comes around. So you essentially need an incredibly fast-trading solution. And we're not close, by the way. We are not close to having a solution that basically would mean the backstop can be ready to default, unless you want to put North Ireland in a cousin. That's how I understand it. Again, other experts will know more. I think this is important from a betting perspective as well, because in basically an era where 3 or 4 political parties are regularly polling 15% or more of the votes, small groups of seats and small factions become incredibly important. So Northern Ireland's change is a good bellwether for what might happen here, or what might happen in terms of the chances of any Brexit deal maybe going through the House of Commons at a future date. It's not impossible there's a new Brexit deal after an election. We could have more than one in a year or so. There's no guarantee that the next election returns a majority, and I think with something like 61%, basically, that we don't have a majority of any sort. We're basically about 63%. We don't have a majority. Without a coalition and no party seems to like each other enough, I don't know where you go with that. Possibly to the ballot box again, unless you're going to have a government of so-called national unity. But I believe, unfortunately, it's a bit of a unicorn.
Well, we're coming to the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for being on, William. It's been great to have you.
It's been lovely.
I'd just like to ask you one question. If you could make a bet on anything, whether it be politics, sport, whatever, and it can be an impossible bet as you like, and you would then win that bet, what would you bet on?
As in, if I could back my fantasy outcome and it would happen. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, this is interesting. I will go for a Brexit deal of some sort to be agreed. By the way, we're 7-4 that if there's a Brexit deal brought back, which is 36%, that passes for the Commons. So that's our deal forecast, which is basically 36% chance of it going for the Commons. I probably say Brexit deal agreed of some sort. I think we're 4-1 that we leave. Are we 4-1 that we leave that deal? I think we're 4-1 that we basically leave with a deal. And I'd say also we get a majority of some sort at the next election. Personal disclaimer, I don't support the Conservative Party, so I guess if you're doing that, it's essentially a magical 14-1, I think it is, for Labour to win the most seats.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And an election this year, which is 4-5. Then if we're going to have sports or anything, I think we're about 4-1 for England to win the Rugby World Cup. And I just think it'd be really interesting to see if an English sport is successful in the United Nations. Actually, just quickly, do you know what, actually? I think we're 7-2 or something for England to win the Euros.
Oh.
Actually, if I could have one fantasy thing happen, it would absolutely be the England football team winning a tournament. Absolutely. I think if anything could solve this whole thing out, it'd definitely probably be England winning the Euros. I think when we went to the semi-finals of the World Cup, generally everybody was so on board. If England could do well at the Euros, I honestly think it'll be a really good social healer.
Well, that's a great response, and I think we can all agree with that. It would be a fantastic event to happen. Thank you for being on the podcast. Again, it's been great to have you on, and you're more than welcome to come back on anytime you like.
Awesome. I'd absolutely love to. I'm free through all the general election. I think we should have a chat.
Yeah, yes. That would be excellent.
Just quickly, a quick thanks to David Stewart, Ben Keefe, Gary Burton, Margaret Pendell and Russ Candler, who basically between them have all allowed me very kindly to be on in the middle of the Queen's speech day. So thank you very much to everybody, David and Ben especially, who worked tremendously hard at getting everything running here.
Well, I extend my thanks to them as well. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify and YouTube. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. If you've got any questions, queries, you want to appear on the podcast, then send an email to thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to the episode. I hope you listen to the next one.